Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, September 11, 2019. President Salva Kiir and Riek Machar pledge to work together to implement the revitalized peace deal.
And I've come back to Juba. Even if I go away for some time, the next coming, maybe IGAD will determine my status to be free to come and discuss more with you here. But our discussion here, we have made important progress.
Government troops and rebels of the National Salvation Front fight in Yei River State.
Our forces moved in and carried out a surgical operation, meaning we were targeting those who were involved in the illegal mining of gold. They were able to flush them out of the area, of the two areas, and the forces captured one AK-47 assault rifle.
We'll bring details on these stories shortly. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar pledge to resolve all outstanding issues, including the number of states, before the November deadline for the formation of a government of national unity. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
As President Kiir and Riek Machar posted for cameras shaking hands, reporters called on both men to comment on their meeting.
The talks between us are going on well, and we will reach a deal soon. So let's be rest assured that things are going on well.
Machar noted that even though he is soon to be South Sudan's first vice president, once again, he is still not a free man.
Juba is home, and I've come back to Juba. Even if I go away for some time, the next coming, maybe IGAD will determine my status to be free to come and discuss more with you here. But our discussion here, we have made important progress.
Machar says he plans to hold a series of meetings with President Kiir in the coming days. Neither Kiir nor Machar would talk about whether they reached a consensus on unresolved issues like the number of states and their boundaries, or how they plan to canton, screen and train all government and opposition forces into one unified army before the November 12 deadline to form a transitional government of national unity. SPLMI or Deputy Chairman Henry Odwar says today's talks focused on amending certain laws to come into compliance with the last year's revitalized peace agreement.
We touched on issues of constitutional amendment, the draft that is going to be presented to Parliament, and we also discussed about the few security laws. We also talked about the issue of non-signatory parties. As you are all aware, we have parties led by persons including Thomas Sirilo, Paul Malong. We touched on those and the need to bring them on board.
The peace deal mandates that the National Security Act, the Army Act, the National Police Service Act, and the Transitional Constitution be amended by Parliament before the parties form a unity government. But lawmakers are on a two-month recess that began about 2 weeks ago. Last month, civil society activists warned that failure to amend the laws before November would affect the formation of a unity government. Odwar says Kiir and Machar discussed the number of states, but only agreed to form another committee.
The two principals have agreed that, yes, we'll have a committee, and this committee will look more into the IBC report, and if we reach a consensus, that will be great. If we don't reach a consensus, then the principals will have to come together again and come up with a final statement or situation, position on the number of states and their boundaries.
Despite reaching no agreement on the unresolved issues, Information Minister Michael Makwe says Kiir and Machar are both confident a unity government will come together on time.
When I say in time, it means on the 12th of November.
It's not clear when Machar plans to return to Khartoum. For VOA News, I'm Wak Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Yei, where a known number of people have been killed and hundreds of civilians displaced after clashes between the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and rebels of the National Salvation Front. One church leader in Yei River State says a known number of civilians have run into the bush. Lasuba Memo has details for VOA from Juba.
SSPDF spokesperson Major General Lul Roy Kong admits government forces launched a raid on NAS rebels beginning last Wednesday. Kong claims the purpose of last week's raid were to dislodge NAS forces, whom he says were mining gold in the area.
Our forces moved in and carried out a surgical operation, meaning we were targeting those who were involved in the illegal mining of gold. They were able to flush them out of the area, of the two areas, and the forces recaptured one AK-47 assault rifle, one G3, and the two generators. The two generators were captured in Charay, but there were no casualties. They did not sustain the casualties as well as our forces.
But NASA spokesman Samuel Suba says the rebels killed more than 30 government forces during last week's clashes. He says the South Sudan People's Defense Forces attacked several NAS positions in Mukaya and Lanya counties of Yei River State.
As usual, the SSCDF continued with the aggression, attacking of National Salvation Front and our forces, in the spirit of self-defense, reacted, and this resulted into overrunning of the government position in this area. And in total of these two operations, we killed the since they were defeated totally until the bases were overrun. We killed almost 35 soldiers and captured around 23 again.
Rufus Joel Lemmy, head of the Lanya Archdiocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the attacks occurred in three separate places: Loka, village of Lanya County, Berekapayam of Lanya County, and Mukaya County of Yei River State. Lemmy, who was in Lanya County when the fighting broke out, says some of the displaced, including women and children, arrived at the Lanya Trading Center over the weekend.
The impact is badly on the ordinary citizen. And right now, there is a displacement. They are right now in Lanya. Those from Loka, they ran to Lanya, and then those in Bereka, most especially the staffs, they also ran to the town. But most of the civilians, they are in the bushes. Women and children, including the elderly.
Let me say some aid agencies, including ACROS, a non-profit local humanitarian agency, and the South Sudan Health Association, pulled out of the areas due to the intense fighting. He says both the NAS and government forces are restricting access to the area.
When things are still very hot like that, you find that these people are so aggressive, they would not allow any person who is not really from their either side to come down. Then it serves like either we are trying to get some information and to report against them.
Enoch Onesimus, the program manager for ACROS, says his group recalled a humanitarian convoy on Monday that was delivering relief items from Juba to an Ebola response team in Yei out of fear for the safety of its staff.
We had a truckload of land cruiser, a lot of things and paper and things that would have helped in the Ebola intervention, but they could not go. The convoy came back, and of course, our priority is the preservation of life of our staff. So we would not want to put them at be able to cross in any dangerous area. So today we have had to, at a more expensive cost, we have had to send some things by air, and we have not sent everything.
Lemmy and other religious leaders in the area are calling on the warring parties to cease hostilities so the suffering of civilians can end. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
President Salva Kiir has been busy this week mediating peace talks between the Sudanese government delegation and armed groups operating in various parts of Sudan. Sudanese living in Juba say they welcome the talks. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
Some Sudanese in Juba say now with former longtime President Omar al-Bashir ousted from power, they are hopeful that Juba can help bring all of Sudan's armed rebel groups to the negotiating table and put an end to Sudan's problems. Speaking in Arabic, Sudanese Juba resident Fodul Ibrahim says Sudan has experienced a long, dark history marked by killings and injustices.
I am expecting that all the politicians and all the leaders should sit like this and be able to agree so that they can raise the country again, and people who fled can be able to return, and those who did not go to school can go, and those who want to farm can do so. We are tired of death. We are tired of all the suffering in the previous years.
Mohamed Abubakar, another Sudanese residing in Juba, advises the rebel groups to take their grievances to the transitional government so that their people are heard during the peace process.
There must be compromises. You must compromise because of your people and not just because you have not gotten a position or you have been fighting, but because of the citizens, so that our country can move ahead. At a certain point, you can even step aside because we want people who are in refuge to return home. But if we stick to our demands, we might not go ahead.
Juba Sudanese resident Ibrahim Suleiman says what matters is addressing the injustices committed during Bashir's regime, not the new government. Speaking in Arabic, Suleiman says although Bashir is gone, some of the officials in the transitional government shared his ideologies.
Something that has oppressed us for the past 30 years or for the last three decades, there was injustice and oppression. But what matters for us now is not that he is gone and the one coming is better, but what we need is a change of attitude and mindset to lead the country.
Suleiman says the new government should prioritize developing the Nuba Mountains, Blue Nile, and Darfur areas most affected by the conflict.
I have seen that Hamdok has formed his cabinet, and I'm expecting that if the political bodies from the old parties and those from Freedom and Change Movement don't interfere and allow him to implement his ideas, I expect this country will improve. But if they go like the old government, I don't expect any change in the Sudan.
At the talks in Juba, Al-Hadi Idris is heading the rebel groups under the umbrella organization Sudan Revolutionary Front. Abdulaziz Al-Hilu is heading the SPLM North faction based in the Nuba Mountains. And General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemeti, is heading the government delegation. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the body of Zimbabwean former President Robert Mugabe arrives in Harare ahead of a state funeral. We'll bring more on that when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you nervous?
What really makes me nervous as an individual is to start something new. So to experience new changes, sometimes it really makes me nervous.
Doesn't usually happen to me. I don't say anything that can make me nervous.
Me, I'm a football fan. So when I'm watching soccer and my team is not performing well, I get nervous. The other thing is when I'm waiting for my results, like at school.
I feel nervous when I'm in public, yeah, like speaking, doing something. And when you hear something like bad news, you feel nervous.
I feel nervous normally when I hear bad news about my loved one. It could be a friend, it could be a relative, it could be somebody or something that I love most.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. They are concerned that the recent attacks on foreigners in South Africa could affect the implementation of Africa's new free trade deal. Mike Ibunye has details from Lagos.
The African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement requires its members to eventually remove tariffs on 90% of goods traded across the continent's borders. There are now concerns that recent xenophobic attacks on immigrants in South Africa may threaten the agreement's success. Kayode Ishola is a senior research fellow at the Institute of African Studies, University of Lagos. He says the diplomatic face-off between Abuja and Pretoria following attacks on Nigerians in South Africa and retaliatory strikes on South African businesses in Nigeria in particular may affect the agreement's success.
Nigeria and South Africa are the two giants of Africa, economically, politically, and otherwise, in terms of influence within the global system. If these two countries are tending towards diplomatic crisis as a result of this so-called xenophobia, it will actually affect the takeoff of the free trade zone. It's unfortunate.
In a wave of attacks over the past several days, scores of foreign-owned businesses were vandalized in South Africa. The police say 12 people died in the violence, but report that 10 were South African citizens, not foreigners. On Wednesday, South African justice and security officials said the violence was criminality and not directly tied to nationality. More than 700 people have been arrested in connection with the violence. In Nigeria, protesters this week attacked South African-owned businesses in the country, although most of them employ only Nigerians. Ishola says the African Union should intervene to push South Africa to stop the attacks.
It's been long overdue. The AU needs to do something very urgently about it, not only because of the tendency to affect the free trade takeoff, but in a bid to achieve the dream of the founding fathers of AU. People like Marco Zave, people like Kwame Nkrumah, people like Julius Nyerere, whose dream was to make Africa one, the United States of Africa.
The AU sees the trade agreement as a way to increase development and economic growth for the 1.2 billion people living on the continent. So far, 27 countries have ratified it and are committed to begin phasing in tariff cuts and eliminating other trade barriers. Babatunde Adeoye, an associate professor of economics at the University of Lagos, says if African leaders are committed, they can get the trade agreement off the ground successfully, despite what happened in South Africa.
Well, we cannot say that South Africa is not a strong player in bringing that particular free trade area to reality. But all the same, South Africa alone cannot stop it.
Adeoye says African leaders should tackle poverty, create jobs, and ensure good governance to prevent similar attacks in their countries. For VOA News, this is Mike Mbonye in Lagos.
We now turn to Zimbabwe, where the body of former President Robert Mugabe has arrived in Harare ahead of a massive state funeral and what will likely be a private burial. VOA's Anita Powell reports.
It was a really somber scene. We had thousands of people, mourners, who had gathered to greet his body on arrival from Singapore, and then an announcement came over the PA system in Shona, I believe, and they said, please, everybody, when the body arrives, we need absolute quiet. And when that happened, you could just hear a pin drop on the tarmac. It was so quiet, except for the military commands that were occasionally shouted out. You could hear everything. And that was quite amazing, because there were quite a lot of people there. And it was a very somber occasion. Earlier there had been singing, there had been bands playing, military bands playing. And then at that moment, when the body arrived, silence.
Now, what is known about the funeral plans?
That's a great question, and that's a question that many Zimbabweans themselves are asking today. So what we know so far is there's going to be some sort of national ceremony at the National Stadium here in Harare. But the thing that's up in the air is where exactly the body will be buried. because what we're hearing, and this is from local media, is that members of Mr. Mugabe's family would like him to be buried at his original village, which is about 100 kilometers west of Harare. But the government would like him buried at Heroes Acre, which is a cemetery for national heroes for members of the liberation struggle. And that cemetery is right up, like right inside Harare city limits. So there's a bit of push and pull about what's going to happen. And it seems at this moment to be kind of unresolved, because the president said we are going to bury him Sunday, but he didn't say where. So as far as we know, that's still up in the air.
What is the mood there in Harare in response to Mr. Mugabe's death?
It's very mixed bag. Today is a working day. A lot of people are working in Harare. So life is continuing as normal, except for the fact that flags are flying at half staff. You know, people are still struggling. You still see queues of cars lining up outside gas stations to get petrol, which is in short supply. You still see people outside ATMs lining up at 6 in the morning to get cash because there's a cash crisis. So for a lot of Zimbabweans and a lot of people in Harare, the capital city, things haven't changed that much. And I did speak to some Zimbabweans about this, and the sentiment seems to be pretty widely, if he were still in power when he died, it would have been significant. But Robert Mugabe, to a lot of Zimbabweans, died in November of 2017, and that is the day that he stepped down from office and ceded power to Emmerson Mnangagwa. That's the day that he died in terms of his power and reach over the nation.
From Zimbabwe, we move to Cameroon, where President Paul Biya says he has ordered the country's prime minister to engage in an all-inclusive dialogue to discuss problems that are tearing the Central African state apart. That includes violence that has killed more than 2,000 people in the troubled Anglophone regions. In a rare address to his nation, Biya also urged foreign nations to help him stop Cameroonians in the diaspora from sponsoring violence back home. Muki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
President Paul Biya said that after all the efforts he has put in place to solve the separatist crisis in the restive English-speaking regions, fighters benefiting from the financial support of Cameroonians in the diaspora have continued to break up his country.
Malgré ces efforts du gouvernement, des mouvements radicaux.
He says in spite of the attempts masterminded by his country's diaspora to destabilize Cameroon, he is happy that the country's defense forces have fought hard and peace is gradually returning to the restive regions. He says all countries of the world should help him by stopping Cameroonians in the diaspora from sponsoring rebellions back at home. Biya said he had given firm instructions that people suffering as a result of the crisis should be given humanitarian assistance both in and out of Cameroon, and that talks about the marginalization of Anglophones were unfounded. He said since English-speaking lawyers and teachers started protesting in 2016 in what they called the domination of the French over the English language, he has recruited more English-speaking teachers and created an English department at the Supreme Court to attend to English speakers.
Il est indispensable de rappeler que les ministres sont autres responsables.
Biya says all Cameroonians should know they are appointed to serve their fatherland, not their tribes or linguistic groups, so should be ready to serve wherever they are, irrespective of tribe and linguistic background. The president said it was difficult to know who to talk to, as people claiming to be separatist leaders hid behind social media platforms to preach violence. He said he had ordered a national dialogue to be presided over by the prime minister with all Cameroonian political leaders, traditional rulers, lawmakers, the clergy, and all elected officials, not only on the Anglophone crisis, but on all the crises facing Cameroon. He was referring to the political crisis that occurred after the 2018 presidential election, in which opposition leader Maurice Kamto proclaimed himself the winner. the Boko Haram insurgency on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, the spillover of the crisis in the Central African Republic and insecurity characterized by the proliferation of weapons. Biya called on all fighters in the English-speaking regions to surrender and be forgiven or face his military. Cameroonians had expected Biya to grant amnesty to arrested separatist leader Julius Ayuk Tabi, who with 9 of his collaborators were given life prison sentences 2 weeks ago, provoking attacks on public edifices in the English-speaking regions and a mass exodus of people. Separatist fighters had vowed to make the regions ungovernable and stop schools from reopening last September until their leaders were unconditionally released. Cameroonians also expected all political leaders, including Kamto and about 200 of his supporters, arrested for protesting what they called their stolen victory and charged with crimes, including terrorism, to be freed. Political analyst Emmanuel Mbafo says Biya, by refusing to address the challenges Cameroon faces, as expected, had simply indicated to the world that he is not ready for a peaceful solution to the crisis.
He has proven to us that he can be very, very unpredictable. Everybody thought he was going to come and say something soft. Rather, he came and declared, does not mean anything.
Cameroonians had expected their president to grant amnesty to return peace to the troubled country. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And remember to send us your feedback on the stories you hear on this program. We will air those comments every Friday. That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Habibi Gelbi by John Kuduse. We've been listening to John Kuduse with the song Habibi Gelbi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.